Welcome to The Flight Deck, a Leading Edge podcast. I'm Captain Michael Wilson, the Communications Committee. Today is March 1st, 2024. It's the first day of a new term and a new master chair. Captain Ann Worster, welcome to The Flight Deck.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Hey, so today is an introduction. We're going to talk about your background and your past and introduce you to the pilots. And we're going to start at the beginning, and I see the cringe, and don't worry about it. I promise this is going to be really easy on you. But first is always family. You're married to a United pilot, and you have a daughter.
That's correct. My husband, Ward Worster, is a 787 line check pilot and has been at United Airlines for 30 years. We have an adult daughter named, appropriately, Sky, who is in college.
That's awesome. Okay, so some basic information. So where were you born?
I was born in New York City.
You raised there in New York?
No, I grew up all over the country. We moved due to corporate moves.
Nice. Okay, so high school. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school in Vandalia, Ohio, and our team mascot was, appropriately, the Aviators.
Oh my gosh. Like you were destined for this. So, United States Air Force Academy.
Correct.
What intrigued you to go to the Air Force Academy?
Well, my father had been a West Point graduate who went into the Air Force before they had an Air Force Academy when the United States Air Force was brand new. And he became an Air Force pilot. He flew B-36s. And from the time I was 5 years old, I was telling everyone that I was going to be an Air Force pilot and I was going to attend the Air Force Academy.
Now, we both know half of the training center just stood out of attention when I mentioned that. So you go to, from there, you get a master's degree at Texas Christian University, TCU in Fort Worth. So tell me, what's your bachelor's degree in? What'd you get a master's in?
Well, I got a bachelor's degree in international relations at the Air Force Academy, and then during my time in Strategic Air Command as a KC-135 aircraft commander, sitting alert, which was 1 week out of every three there in Fort Worth, Texas, we were offered the opportunity to get a master's degree, and it was a master's in liberal arts, which is very useful for cocktail conversation.
Fantastic work right there. So you come out of the Air Force Academy, you fly the KC-135, you deploy in the first Gulf War, I believe, right?
That is correct. We deployed our crew 5 days before the war kicked off, and we joined 57 other crews, so there were 60 total. And our crew, I had the only second lieutenant, co-pilot, who had a grand total of 300 hours flying time in all aircraft. He was the only second lieutenant in the war, and yet by the end of the war, we had flown more missions than any of the other 60 crews.
So I understand you come out with a couple of air medals and twice awarded Aircraft Commander of the Year.
That's correct.
Pretty awesome. So KC-135, and I believe the first, were you thinking of Air Force as a career? What were you thinking back then?
Oh, I was absolutely convinced that I was going to stay in the Air Force for a career until the war and the experience of having Scud missiles launched and blown up over our heads with the Patriot defense system. And we were also shot at by AAA during our missions. I had a surface-to-air missile launched and went off the right side of the airplane. And we actually had a MiG coming south to the border right before the war kicked off. And around that time, I said, gee, I wonder how hard it would be to become an airline pilot.
So safe to say you're not flying over there having a nice cup of coffee, just watching this scenery go by?
No, it was quite busy.
So your first step coming out is American Airlines. Where were you living at the time when you go to work for American?
Actually, I was living in Fort Worth at Carswell Air Force Base. And it was an interesting story because 2 years earlier, our simulator had broken at Carswell Air Force Base in KC-135, which is the 707 airframe. And American Airlines had a 707 sim, so we drove over there to do an emergency procedure sim. And I had the luck to climb into the simulator on the 707 immediately after John Travolta had just finished his training, so that was quite exciting.
And Vinny Barbarino.
There you go. Welcome back, Kata. And at the end of that training, which was given, the instructor was an American Airlines instructor. And at the end of that training, he tried to hand me an application, and I refused it.
Right.
And then, of course, after Desert Storm 2 years later, I was knocking on the front door saying, please let me in.
So what do you end up flying at American?
I was a flight engineer on the 727, and I was there for 1 year, completed probation, and was furloughed the very next day.
Very nice. Based where?
I was based in Miami initially, got back to Dallas-Fort Worth, which is where our home was. And then, unfortunately, leading into the furlough, the most junior base was Miami. So everyone ended up in Miami before they dropped off the bottom of the list.
So here you are at United, 28 years here at United. What have you flown for United Airlines?
Well, I started out on the 727 as a flight engineer, did 6 months there, took the first bid that I could get flying the 727 in the right seat. And about 4 years later, I got a 747-400 and was the most junior person system-wide, as you can imagine, with less than 5 years seniority at the company. Unfortunately, after 9/11, I was displaced to the 777. I stayed on that for about two decades until COVID, and they closed the 777 domicile here in Washington, D.C., and I switched to the right seat of the 787 for about 6 or 8 months, and then took the first bid that I could get into the left seat of the 777.
Pretty awesome. So what did you do, a base tour? Have you done multiple bases here?
I started in Denver for a very short period of time. And then Ward and I were based out in San Francisco for about 15 years. And then we made the move back east in 2007.
So when you're out in San Francisco, I believe that I read, is when you first kind of get the interest in ALPA and union volunteerism here at the airline. When you were at American, you just weren't there long enough. Is that right?
Well, At American, I did attend. I tried to stay up to speed on the issues, and I did attend local union meetings. But obviously, as a probationary pilot, you know, we were told, keep your head down, and there'll be a time for you. Unfortunately, I only, you know, survived one day after probation before getting furloughed. And then, you know, when I got to United, I was on reserve at the bottom of the list. I've pretty much been on the bottom of every airplane that I've bid. And so when I was on reserve, because we live local, I would go to every meeting that I could go to on reserve. And then, of course, you know, as it happens in ALPA, when you show an interest and you are showing up at the meetings and you get to know people, then they reach out and they ask you to start doing things and have you ever considered? And that's, I basically got tagged by our local captain rep to be the legislative chair there in San Francisco, Council 34. And then I was asked by another pilot who was active in safety work to be the 747-400 local safety rep on that local committee. And so that's how those things work in ALPA. You start doing one thing, and then people start asking you to do more.
Once you show you can do it. You know, you and I have something in common there. I was the plug 737 captain in Chicago, and I think that crew scheduling just had me on speed dial, just no sleep at all. So today... Yesterday, let me back that up. Yesterday, you are the DCA Council 11 chair. Before that, you're the first officer rep during contract negotiations. Tell me about some other positions that you've held within ALPA. You just said that you did all the work out on the West Coast and everything like that. You've always been engaged.
I've always tried to do something. When we had our daughter, we never had a nanny, so we flew opposite schedules. And then, like many of our pilots, they have elderly parents that they take care of. And we had my elderly parents working with us. They have both since passed away. But that was a time period during which I stepped back from taking an active role or being in charge of any committee because of those requirements. But I always tried to attend meetings, and I always tried to attend pickets, things that I could do as an individual to show up and be seen and support the cause. One of the things that I was able to do was the election ballot certification at ALPA National back when it was in Herndon and then here now in Valo in this building. It was something that I could sign up for as my schedule would allow.
So always participating in your career.
Always something. What can I give back to ALPA, even if it's in the smallest way, to stay engaged?
You know, I know one of the constant conversations it seems that we always have is how to get more pilots to come in and be engaged and work for their career and work in the service of other pilots. So that's pretty fantastic. So now you're the MEC chair, and I think it's always interesting how these events come about and pilots that don't see the inner workings of how that comes around. What's the catalyst? What makes you decide, I think I'm going to run for master chair?
Actually, I didn't make that decision. I was asked. When I ran for FO rep, I am a line pilot. I have always been a line pilot. And that is my focus. It is serving the membership. And so I ran for, I upgraded to captain during my 3-year FO rep term. And I got elected to be captain rep, and I ordered 500 captain rep business cards because that was my focus. That is what I thought I would be doing. And I was asked to run by a number of MEC members, and it's hard to turn them down. I continue to be focused on the membership, and I think it's a mindset that you bring when you are a line pilot to these types of leadership positions, that you're focused on the concerns of the membership, and I hope I can keep that going forward. And that's why it is so important for me and for the people that are serving with me this term to stay current and qualified and be in the jet, talk face-to-face with the pilots. There's no substitute to those one-on-one conversations.
Yeah, there's always the thought that people's team seem to lose focus and mm-hmm. lose direction if they're not working. And can't agree more with you. Truly fantastic. I mean, talk to me a little bit about, so you're a voting rep sitting at the table during the contract negotiations, and we know the ups and downs of the failed TA, and then we get the successful TA. And just the process that you go through there is, you know, you're evaluating when you're getting briefed. Well, now you're the master chair, which means you don't have that vote, but you're kind of leading the pack. Tell me your view on how you see that.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Michael. The reps themselves at the horseshoe are the ones that have a voice and a vote. And the front table, the officers, do not. But we can serve by helping the MEC move forward in doing their work and bringing them together and doing it efficiently and doing it together.
So you lead, they set the policy,
absolutely.
You implement it.
Absolutely. The MEC is in charge. I serve the MEC, and the MEC serves the membership. And that's what I'm looking to do, is to support the representatives at the table and also the committees and support them so they can do their best work so that we can fulfill our goals and our strategic plan.
So today is March 1st, 2024. It's your first day as the master chair. Tell me what you think the major tasks are facing your current MEC.
Well, the biggest task, because we have this new agreement, UPA 2023, would be contract implementation and enforcement. It's critical that our members understand their contracts so that they can enforce that. And that is directly driven by the pieces that are put out through communications committees, such as the committee that you chair, that helps our pilots. It breaks down the contract into pieces that they can understand, not in the language written by the legal team, but in language that they can, clear English that they can understand. What does it mean? How do I enforce it? How can I hold the company accountable? We've seen a real ramp up in discipline cases, and so that is a big focus for me personally and for the administration, is to try to return the discipline process back to the flight offices, to the chief pilots and the assistant chief pilots, so that we can keep things on a verbal council level. And then the third big item, and I spoke to it a little bit earlier, is the strategic plan. We haven't had a strategic plan since I've been on the MEC, and I'm confident that with our being able to determine our objectives and our goals, that we'll be able to be successful. But we need to determine where we want to get so that we can determine how to get there, and then hold each of ourselves and the committees accountable to achieving those goals.
So let me just go through those a little bit at a time here. So you've got the implementation team. So we call it the CIA, of the Contract Implementation Administration Team. You attend those weekly meetings. Mm-hmm. You participate in all that. Satisfied with how that's going? Seem to be going pretty successful?
I do think it's been successful. It's certainly, the pieces that they put out, the education pieces they put out about the contract, are helpful. And then, of course, on the back end, for each individual situation, the pilots can avail themselves of writing a PDR, and they're talking directly to the subject matter experts with whatever piece of the contract it is that they have a question about, because so many things have changed. And that way they know, you know, they can ask somebody, and they're very timely in their responses. And if it is an urgent matter, not trip trading, but an urgent matter, they can put a PDR into the contract hotline, and I have seen answers come back in minutes if it's in the actual operation.
And you know, one of the things that, and you've talked to them, Captain Steve Raddick and Captain Andy Riggs, Adrian Rivera, Phil Otis, their encyclopedic knowledge of the contract is just impressive.
Beyond reproach. I mean, they are all such impressive individuals, and they're just walking brains, all of them. Photographic memories. I mean, that they can just quote parts of the contract, sections of the contract, without looking them up.
Just amazing. And then as a rep at the DCA base, you actually participated in disciplinary hearings and in those kinds of meetings. So as you walk through there, I'm guessing that you're thinking that experience is really going to help you in this HR, LR issues that you see.
Yes. I participated in a number of discipline cases. My first year, they were very limited, and then it was a ramp up, unfortunately. Fewer and fewer things were handled by a phone call or an in-person conversation with nothing on the record, which for most pilots, that's all that's required. I mean, if it's an education piece, very often their intent was core four. You know, they're trying to help a passenger. They got a little bit, you know, into another work group's lane, or, you know, as I like to call it, off the magenta line. And all they need is a little bit of education to get back and to understand whatever the regulation was that they, you know, were unaware of. And unfortunately, right now, everything is elevated. They're not keeping things in the flight office. They're bringing HR, and we're doing formal investigatory interviews. And that's very stressful for the pilots, even if we're able to off-ramp the case and nothing comes of it. Just going through the process itself is incredibly stressful.
For everyone, I imagine. And so one of my favorite stories about the strategic plan, and I know you guys are about to get into all this, is when I became the communications chair and we had our very first meetings. We're just coming out of the failed TA. We've gone through a couple of master chairs pretty quickly, and it seems like everything is kind of a mess. And we have this big meeting of how do we put together, I think we're beyond the point of being able to have a strategic plan, but we called it the re-engagement plan. And one of my favorite stories is there's one rep on their day off who came to a meeting. That was you.
Oh, Michael, I'm so flattered that you remember that. Yes, I did come to the strategic planning meeting, and it was really a negotiating plan. How do we get from where we were, which was admittedly not a good place as an MEC, as a body, and how do we find the path that's going to get us to a contract that is ratifiable, and not just ratifiable, but overwhelmingly supermajority level, 80% ratifiable, which it's just incredible, the journey that we all went on together. And I showed up that day because I think it is so important to support the work. I'm so thankful that you have, you know, stepped up in a very challenging, difficult time and as the comm chair and brought us to where we are, because the success of this contract is very much it because people like you and your committee stepped up and did something different that we had never seen before. And that was you told the truth and you were transparent and you did not try to sell this agreement to the pilots, and look at the success that you had.
You know, and that's the very next point that I had written down to talk to you about is, you know, one of the things that Garth started his administration on was the transparency. And I've watched you, we've talked about this, and I know that transparency is at the forefront of everything that you want to do. And I'd like you to just tell me, you're telling the pilots now, that your pledge is to be transparent in everything and keep them informed every step of the way.
Absolutely. And that is the history that I have in Council 11 is I believe I have the reputation for telling the truth. Good, bad, ugly, I tell pilots the truth. They have a right to know the truth. I'm not going to spin a message. I'm going to tell them exactly how I see it, you know, what's happening up at the MEC. And the result of that was we were there. I was with the FAC team when the TA came out, and we were in the CPO, and the pilots were coming in, you know, to flight plan and go on their trips. And I invited them to come over, come talk to the FAC team. Do you have any questions? So that you can be knowledgeable when you make your vote, not telling people how to vote, but just that they make a vote from a position of knowledge. And I'll never forget, a pilot said to me, well, Ann, I don't need to talk to the FAC team. You voted yes. That's good enough for me because I know you're hard to please.
and you make a great point there, because, you know, sitting in the back of the room and we're watching as the MEC is debating each issue. And one of the things that we always talked about is you pushed every day in every meeting, to the point that some of the times our back channel conversation was like, Ann's no, because she's pushing. And I think it was just indicative of how hard you wanted to push to get the most for the pilots.
Oh, that is absolutely it. In that room, I would always push to get more. I'd push, you know, among my fellow MEC members with the negotiating committee. I always want to get more from my pilots. At the end of the day, when we had a tentative agreement, you know, as a rep, I have to make a decision. You know, if we extend this process out further, longer, you know, how much are we going to get back? Is there a chance that we could get significantly more in a short period of time? And I did not believe that we could. And I thought we had a great agreement on the table. But ultimately, I want the pilots to decide. And they agreed with a tremendous 80% vote.
And we were successful.
We were successful.
So before we jump out of here, because we're about 25 minutes in, I'd like to extend a great congratulations to you. I'm so happy.
I'm so flattered. And I want to thank you for agreeing, you and your team, for agreeing to stay and help us during this transition period and for this next 2 years where we have so much work to do, and you have such a great calm machine set up and are so successful, and it's really going to be a great help and support to us.
So the truth is, it was like the Godfather. Once you're in, they pull me back again.
So we won't let you go.
Truth. We'd like to give the best well wishes to Captain Garth Thompson, and thanks for his service and success as he goes off to fly the 777 out of San Francisco. I'm Michael Wilson. This is the Flight Deck. We'll see you on the line. And please come back. Tell us more.
Thank you. Anytime, Michael. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.